Today on Wings, the topic is mothering, our brains, and the gift economy.
Nurture becomes nature. Nurture is incarnated into our genes, and then what is not part of nurture dies off. And so our brains are actually sculpted by our relationships with our mothers. And it is that interaction that is the very basic pattern of life, and which we use as the glasses through which we see the world. And so we can redefine our species as an extremely maternal species. We're not Homo sapiens, just the one that knows. And we're not Homo economicus. We're Homo donans, the giving and receiving being.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hi, this is Frieda Worden, series producer of Wings. In October 2016, I traveled to Toronto for the 20th anniversary conference of the Motherhood Initiative for Research and Community Involvement. There were diverse, amazing talks at this three-day event, and I have several hours of recordings to share in this program over time. But let me be frank and say the special reason I chose to attend this conference was that my longtime friend and mentor, and a good friend to Wings as well, would be presenting there. Genevieve Vaughn, like me, is originally from Texas, but has broken out of the U.S. bubble to involve herself with feminist thinkers and activists from many parts of the world. In 1997, she published the first of four major works on the theory of the gift economy. The latest is titled, The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. Now here's Genevieve Vaughn's presentation at the Motherhood Studies Conference in Toronto.
Hi. Well, I think we should have a matricentric revolution, not just matricentric feminism. Mm-hmm. And I want to put into that pot also the gift economy and matriarchal studies, the paradigm of the mother instead of the paradigm of patriarchy and the market. So I want to talk to you all about what the gift economy is and how mothering fits into it. I've been working on the idea of the gift economy for many years. I started like 40 years ago, and I didn't think anybody was ever going to understand it. And then all of a sudden, people started doing alternative economics, and people are talking about gift economy everywhere now. And they've also done it on the internet, like Wikipedia, for example, is a really good example of the gift economy. So it's become almost a household word. But the thing that's missing from this whole discourse is mothering. And just last year, we did a conference in Rome on the maternal roots of the gift economy. And that's what I try to promote and try to add to the talk about the gift economy. So let me just start by talking about mothering. Derrida questioned the existence of unilateral giving because the recognition of oneself as a giver would be sufficient to constitute a payback, an exchange. I believe this would be true only in a society where not many people are givers. Otherwise, giving would not be exceptional, and there would be no ego payoff for doing it. Like many other people living in a market economy and patriarchy, Derrida did not recognize there is a whole category of people who do unilateral giving all the time, that is, mothers, or others who care for very young children who cannot give back an equivalent in exchange. People in this category are not recognized as exceptional, but instead they may be considered self-sacrificial and slavish, and payoffs to their egos are hard to come by. That is, it's hard to come by payoffs to egos of mothers. I believe that the interaction between mothers and children has a logic that is contrary to the logic of the market. Satisfying others' needs unilaterally is structural and economic. Free is a mode of distribution. Because it is necessary for children's survival, unilateral giving and receiving is the first and most important interpersonal structure. Adequate mothering creates relations of mutuality and trust, and it carries a deep emotional investment for the child, which continues throughout life. Giving and receiving constitute a first simple pattern or schema that can be elaborated upon in many ways. At a basic level, it requires that one person identify the need of the other and procure or make something to satisfy it. Giving freely without an exchange gives value to the receiver by implication. As the child grows up, she learns that there are many variations on giving. Many different kinds of gifts can be given and received. Many different people can fill the roles of giver and receiver. The gift can be repeated. It can be passed on to others. It can take place at different levels, from perceptual gifts to material gifts, to services of care, to gifts of attention and ostension, communicative gestures, and gifts of language. It is not useful to use the word exchange to describe these gift interactions, because the quid pro quo exchanges of the market follow a very different logic. While unilateral giving is transitive and gives value to the receiver by implication, market exchange is intransitive and self-directed, giving value to the self by means of the other. Only around 3 years of age do children begin to understand market exchange, and they usually do not fully master it until adolescence. Although there are many situations in which children are deprived of adequate nurturing, they are all dependent on others' gifts in their first years, and they therefore all receive the model of this process of unilateral giving and receiving. I believe that they receive the model of exchange later, after which they look through its logic at the world, forgetting and canceling and devaluing giving, which nevertheless continues to exist. This can have the effect of diminishing the importance of mothering and of childhood, separating them from the so-called real life of the market. In the last decades, a new field of research on infancy, which includes mothers at least to some extent, has made some important discoveries about the first two years of life, beginning from birth and even with the study of the fetus in the womb. Infancy researchers have disproved the ideas of Freud, Piaget, and Skinner, who thought of the infant as egocentric. They have given up the idea of the newborn child as a solipsist living in a world of its own, like a chick in an egg, and have found that from birth, the infant is a highly social being who elicits nurture from her caregivers. By studying newborn children, these researchers discovered that they are ready to interact socially with their mothers and others from their very first moments, which mothers probably already know themselves without going through the infancy researchers. Anyway, Colin Trevarthen, who's a really good one of these researchers, says, "We are born with an active intersubjective mind, born to generate shifting states of self-awareness, to show them to other persons, and to provoke interest and affectionate responses from them." So children communicate from the beginning, and already at around 2 months, children and caregivers can take turns giving and receiving in what the new infant psychologists are calling proto-conversations. These interactions of sounds, gestures, and smiles have been studied interculturally and appear to be universal moments of mother-child activity. They have been studied as music, and musical scores have been written to describe them. Although these interactions are coordinated and require reciprocity, they are not quid pro quo exchanges. They are turn-taking in unilateral giving of the signs of the self to the other. Infants also engage in joint attention with their caregivers, in which they are both receivers of the same perceptual gifts at the same time. And somewhat later, they show the capacity to mind read, that is, to take the perspective of others. These and all the other early developments take place within the gift economy of early childhood, that is, within the first 3 years, when giving and receiving is the basis of the way we survive. Unfortunately, child psychologists and infancy researchers do not give much attention to giving and receiving as such, because most of them work in a psychotherapeutic culture with the goal of healing distress that is mainly psychological. The core interaction of giving and receiving, nurturing, for them is mostly a given. For me, the economy of giving and receiving is a long-term interest. I see it as an economy of provisioning, which is an alternative to the market. I also see it from a feminist point of view when I look at the so-called domestic sphere in contrast to the market. To show you the scale of gifting that exists in our society, let's consider that the gift economy is a core aspect of the domestic economic sphere. Feminist economists like Marilyn Waring have discussed the free household economy at length, and they have also paradoxically attempted to assess it by giving it a monetary value. One of Marilyn Waring's followers and mentors also, who's a man called Duncan Ironmonger, said in 2003 that household production is now recognized as an alternative or parallel economy to the market. Rather than being a satellite to the market economy, the household economy is best considered a binary star. In 2012, Ironmonger estimated that if valued in monetary terms, the USA's 2011 gross household product would be $11.6 trillion, as compared to a market-based GDP of $13.3 trillion. So you see, it's really huge and almost the same. If we add to this free production the global ecosystems services, that is what nature provides, which have been estimated at some $125 trillion a year, compared to the monetized economy's $75 trillion GDP, we can see how the market economy actually floats upon a sea of gifts. Of course, not all of this gifting in the household economy is unilateral, but a lot of it is centered around a core of care, and especially of child care. Marcel Mauss and his followers, he was an important anthropologist, and who wrote in 1923, did not recognize that the first two steps, giving and receiving, of the three-step process, giving, receiving, and giving back, already create a relation between the giver and the receiver, and that this is a relation of mutuality and trust, rather than one of debt and obligation, as happens with the third step, the constraint of giving back. Many of us have seen how dangerous and how heavy the relations based on debt in the market economy are. Instead, gratitude for free gift initiatives by others creates solidarity with them and opens the way to imitation and to repeating the gift to others when possible, to passing it on. A positive relational economy is a provisioning economy, a gift economy beyond exchange, that continues to build upon the ongoing relations established with the mother. Indigenous peoples were doing this in their so-called pre-capitalist or pre-market economies. They continue even now in spite of colonization, and many of them continue to honor the earth and honor the mother in peaceful ways. I'm saying this because I want to also propose the image schema of the gift as an underlying pattern or schema for language and communication. Image schemas, or these patterns, used to be seen only in regard to the individual body. They were like done by George Lakoff and Johnson. They were like up and down, a container, a path to the goal, that were of the schemas that come from our living in a body. The image schema of the gift, instead, is interpersonal. Infant psychology, which sees the child already as a social being from birth, shows how identities are formed through kinetic identification with the mother and through the simulation of others' experiences with mirror neurons. A very few mirror neuron researchers discuss giving and receiving, though they do discuss the hand motions of grasping, picking up, and putting. This does not entail giving to them or receiving. Stein Brocken, one of these researchers, makes the only comment I have seen on this. He says that we should expect, for example, that in humans, give mirror neurons should be activated during own giving and while watching the other give, and that grasp mirror neurons be activated during own grasping and while watching the other grasp. I'm going to skip over a little bit of this because I'm afraid I'm going on a little too long. If we do simulate each other's experiences in the ways that of mirror neurons, the child would subconsciously know what it is for the mother to give, and she would know what it is for the child to receive, making it possible for each to understand the role of the other in this pattern or schema, which they are already playing these roles in daily life, so that in a way, although it is trite to say it, giving is receiving and receiving is giving. I believe that much of the concentration on the independent individual is now superseded by what is called interpersonal neurobiology. This discipline shows how the mother-child attachment relation actually sculpts our neuron connections. Let me just play a couple of minutes of Alan Shore explaining this approach. And let me add the startling statement that he makes elsewhere, that in the first months, infants add 40,000 new neuron connections each second. So I'm going to try showing you this short video.
One of the great fallacies that many scientists have is mm-hmm. that everything that is before birth is genetic, and that everything that is after birth is learned. This is not the case. There is more genetic material in the cerebral cortex at 10 months, much, much more than there is at birth. What this means is that the genes are spinning out, are programming, well into the first year. They don't stop at birth. And the genes that are encoding the connections between those parts of the brain that are coming on later, therefore, are in a very active state well into the first year. That is, the lower parts of the brain and the brainstem, etc., are well advanced at birth, but many parts of the cerebral cortex are not even myelinated at birth. Essentially, at birth, you've got a subcortical infant there. And parts of the human brain are not coming online until well into the first year. So as a matter of fact, at 10 months or 12 months, which is the first time when the attachment patterns are measured by the strange situation, I've suggested that the prefrontal area is now for the first time are coming online. The growth spurt of the brain is occurring from the last trimester of infancy through the second year. And at that time, the brain is more than doubling in size. It's connecting up. But its maturation is experience dependent. It's not as if the genes are encoding how everything is going to fall together. It needs certain types of experiences for the brain to grow. And the most important parts of the brain that we're looking at in the first year to grow, by my own thoughts, are those parts of the brain that are involved with the emotional and the social functioning of the child. Those are the ones which are embedded in the attachment relationship. In order for those parts of the brain to grow, which is part of the limbic system involved with emotion, certain experiences are needed. Those experiences are embedded in the relationship between the caregiver and the infant. If they're positive, if they're regulated, then we'll have an optimal situation. And literally, the potentiality of the genes will be carried forth to the fullest, so to speak. And so now, one of the most important recent discoveries in the last 10 years in biology has been this idea about developmental cell death. The brain does not continue to grow and grow and grow. It organizes, then it disorganizes, then it reorganizes. And the disorganization of the brain, which is the massive death of billions of neurons and the disconnections of synapses, is part of how the brain is growing as it's reorganizing. Those connections that are not used die off, which is why early enriched environments, which means emotionally and early enriched environments, more so than wonderful little dangling colors and shapes, are key here. As if to say there is something in, there's something necessary that the human need, that the human brain needs in terms of other human contact for it to grow. It's a use it or lose it situation. Cells that fire together, wire together. Cells that do not die together.
Okay, so this for me, when I first heard this, it was a total shift, because it means that nurture becomes nature. Nurture is incarnated into our genes, and then what is not part of nurture dies off. And so our brains are actually sculpted by our relationships with our mothers. And it is that interaction that is the very basic pattern of life, and which we use as the glasses through which we see the world. And I believe language is also based on that, and I can tell you some more about that too, as I'm afraid I'm gonna go on too long. I have 1 minute left? Okay. Well, I think that what we need to do now is to elaborate upon the importance of mothering and this kind of relationship that in the kinds of patterns that take place through nurturing. And to doing that, we can redefine our species as an extremely maternal species. We're not Homo sapiens, just the one that knows. And we're not Homo economicus. We're Homo donans, the giving and receiving being, both men and women, because men had mothers too. So we all are a different kind of creature than we thought we were. And that has consequences for what we do. It has consequences in learning to have peace instead of war. And have distribution of goods to the people that have the needs, instead of having a 1% of capitalists that are dominating over everybody. So that's what I try to promote with the gift economy idea, is that we are something else than what they've been telling us all this time, and we need to shift our paradigm towards that.
You are listening to Genevieve Vaughn's presentation at the 2016 Motherhood Studies Conference in Toronto. A woman in the audience expressed curiosity about whether the neurobiology effects Vaughn described, such as the activation of mirror neurons, continues after infancy.
My background is community organizing, and we do all of this relational work where we sit down, we try to figure out what makes people tick, we share a part of our story, we want to hear their story. And so I see that as an extension of what we see in infancy. Do you agree, disagree? What's your thoughts on that?
Sure. I think basically social life is an extension of what we learn in infancy. But we shouldn't abolish that and start saying that we begin to think with exchange, and the logic of exchange, the identity logic of exchange and putting things in categories is not the first logic, and it's not the main logic. that we continue with throughout life. We've just ignored it. We've become blind to it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, my sense, I've always, when I started learning about this model and started practicing it, I felt like I came back to the roots of something. Like, it really feels very rooted for me in that. And so, and directly connected to a lot of the parenting work and work with other parents breastfeeding and all of this other kind of stuff. So I just wanted to sort of see if my reaction was something that made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the problems is that the neuropsychology does not envision gifting at all. It's not even interested. So it's talking about psychological things that mothers and children do, and not the basis of feeding or nurturing or what the woman was talking about this morning, breastfeeding. So that nurturing is actually the basis of language, and of course we do that when we're adults. So, yeah.
Vaughan's first major book was titled Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. In that, she sets out the premise that the exchange economy, also described as patriarchal capitalism, lives off the underlying gift economy. A member of the audience in Toronto remarked that the term gift economy has become popularized and is also being appropriated. How can we take it back? She asked. Genevieve Vaughan.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can take it back, but it's obvious that all of the gifts that are out there are being commodified. For example, if you look at seeds, how they've been commodified and made into Terminator seeds, and people don't have access to their own seeds anymore. And water, look at water. So many gifts that are in the world are being taken and taken over by capitalism and turned over. So yes, Uber, for example, or Airbnb, these are businesses that have taken over gift initiatives. And so we need to talk about that. But I think a big conversation on gifts versus exchange needs to happen, and it's not happening yet. So it's all part of a big new discourse that needs to come about.
That was Genevieve Vaughan, a theorist who works on the premise that human beings are fundamentally gift givers, and that unilateral giving is the basis for our physical and mental development, our language acquisition, and our survival as a species. Among her works is a children's book titled Free, Not Free, an anthology titled Women and the Gift Economy, and many other writings and videos that can be found on the website gifteconomy.com. That's gift economy with a hyphen, gift-economy.com. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our page at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our friendly supporters, including Genevieve Vaughan, Suzette Cullen, and your local community radio station. Wings makes programs available to stations free of charge. Inquire by email wings@wings.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.